We would like to acknowledge that we are recording on the traditional territories of the Lekwungen people. Also, it is essential that we keep in mind that even though we are called the historical natives, these clans and the people these creatures belong to are still here today. We are simply the storytellers and the listeners.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Historical Natives.
Yeah, it's been a hot second.
So starting off the season, we're talking about the little people, specifically the Manageshi from the Cree peoples.
And, like always, we'll talk a bit about their history and some current events, and then we'll dive into the creature. I'd say that sounds pretty crisp.
So let's get into it. The territory of the Cree peoples spans from the subarctic and the plains region of Alberta all the way to Quebec, making theirs the most widespread territory in the country. This wide range may be impartial due to the fact that many bands of Cree were traditionally nomadic, traveling seasonally to follow the food supply. We also know that the Woods Cree expanded into the plains in pursuit of the Hudson's Bay fur trade, which had been shifting rapidly west and southward during the 1700s. There are now a small number of Plains Cree in Montana who were displaced by the intrusion of the newly formed U.S./Canada border. In addition to their large territory, Cree have the largest population out of any other indigenous peoples in Canada.
The Cree social structure was typically built around smaller hunting bands. It was made up of a few families during the hunting season. They would then join together in large groups during the summer. Many nations' spiritual beliefs dictate that the purpose of creation is to live in balance with all things. This belief is shared by the Nehiyawak as well. Ceremony is considered by many to be the highest form of knowledge, where teachings and natural laws are passed down from ancestors. One such ceremony that many of you might have heard of is the Sundance Ceremony. This is a sacred ceremony held in early spring to midsummer by the Plains people. They gather in large camps and at a predetermined location to celebrate. The purpose of Sundance is to show gratitude through self-sacrifice. Dancers will often fast for days as an offering to accompany their prayers. It is one of the central, most important ceremonies of the Plains people.
First contact with the Europeans, in many cases, was on a commercial basis and was no different from the Nehiyawak, who, as a society that depended largely on hunting and trapping for sustenance, they had a key role in the fur trade that would be dominated by the Hudson's Bay Company. As we mentioned earlier, this trade relationship is partly responsible for the westward migration of the Plains Cree. During this time, the various indigenous nations in contract with Euro traders were still mostly free to carry out their traditional ways of being, continuing to operate under their own sovereign government systems and natural laws. Early treaties focused on peace and friendship between newcomers and the original peoples, and set out agreements to share land and resources in the process of doing business.
This expansive quality of their cultures has also had an effect on the Cree language, which is considered by linguists to be a dialect continuum. That is, a broad variety of dialects that evolves across a geographic expanse. Cree is in fact a branch of the larger Algonquin language family, which also includes languages like Anishinaabe Mohan, Siksika or Blackfeet, and Mi'kmaq, among others. As for Cree itself, there are five main dialects, depending on who you ask. These are Western or Plains Cree, spoken from central Alberta through southern Saskatchewan, Northern or Woods Cree, also called Rock Cree, spoken in Manitoba and northeastern Saskatchewan, Central or Swampy Cree, spoken in northern Manitoba and Ontario, Moose Cree, spoken in Northern Ontario, and James Bay or Eastern Cree, spoken mainly on the east coast of both Hudson and James Bay. Some linguists also consider Atikamekw, Montagne, and Niscape, which are spoken mainly in Quebec, to also be dialects of the Cree continuum, while others consider them distinct. Additionally, many Cree dialects have sub-dialects of their own. These various dialects are all considered to be part of the same language, but most dialects of Cree are typically mutually intelligible only to the communities and dialects closest to them. Speakers of dialects that are more geographically distant will have a much harder time understanding one another. Interestingly, the common moniker for these people and their language, Cree, does not originate with them. Rather, Cree is an abbreviation of Cristino, a name given to them by the French that is presumably a mispronunciation of an indigenous name. In their own language, the Cree refer to themselves as Iyinawak, or Ininawak, which means the people, or Nahiyawak, which means speakers of the Cree language. Despite efforts to preserve the language, statistics still show that fluency is declining over time, meaning that Cree's status as one of the most commonly spoken indigenous languages in Canada has still not protected it from linguistic genocide.
So, this week's phrase is Wikitsko Pawiskan, which means the bannock tastes good.
This week's call to action is the Cree Cultural Institute, located in Oje-Bugumu, Quebec. The Cree Cultural Institute is a museum, archive, library, teaching center, and cultural center created with the vision of preserving Cree culture for future generations. It is the Cree's primary location for preservation of documents, media, and physical objects designed for preservation, conservation, and knowledge transfer.
What is a Mangishi? Well, they are known to be mischievous tricksters who love playing pranks on humans. They spend most of their time living near dams, in the rivers, and can also be found often within rock dwellings such as caves.
If disrespected, they've been known to capsize boats as they travel through. And they love to wreak havoc by spoiling or stealing goods that are being carried through their rivers and streams. Their appearance can often be described as having a relatively short stature, large head and eyes, no nose or mouth, and six fingers and toes. They're also said to have frog-like skin, which allows them to absorb oxygen through the water.
The Dover Demon, Dover, Massachusetts, 1977. Over the course of 2 days, in April 1977, four teenagers of Dover, Massachusetts, witnessed a frightening, alien-looking creature. But before they could find an explanation, it disappeared. The four claimed to describe the same thing: large, glowing eyes on an otherwise blank face, no nose, and no mouth. William Bartlett was the first person to see the Dover Demon. Him and a few friends were driving down the road, coming back from a party, when one of them saw something on the side of the road. He said it was climbing down a broken part of the stone wall, when the creature slowly turned its head and stared into the lights of the oncoming car. Its two large, round, lidless eyes shined brightly. Bartlett described it to be like two orange marbles. It also had a watermelon-shaped head, resting at the top of a thin neck, and was the same size of the rest of its body. It also had a thin, long, spindly arms and legs, with large hands and feet. The skin is hairless and peach-colored, and appears to have a rough texture, like wet sandpaper. Another sighting of the creature comes from John Baxter, just 2 hours after Bartlett. Baxter was walking his girlfriend home near a heavily wooded area when he said he got within 15 feet of a creature that looked remarkably similar to the one that Bartlett saw. He stated that this creature had large eyes and tendril-like hands, and was standing next to a tree. The next night, on April 22nd, at around midnight, Abby Brabham saw the Dover Demon. She stated that much like the night before, the creature was standing upright next to a tree. Weirdly enough, all the sightings form a straight line over 2 miles, and all are near bodies of water.
And now, Camping in the Sticks, written by Joseph Stafford and Mackenzie Taylor.
For those trying to leave the chaotic city for the comfort of the forest, they may find it to be disappointing. For the silence that one might unearth in the woods can be just as loud as the bustling city. On a warm, sun-soaked day, lacking any clouds, we meet our three travelers driving to get away from just that, the chaotic city. Jake is driving 20 over the limit, his eyes wandering every now and then. His twin brother, Mac, sitting in the passenger seat beside him, was zoning in and out, taking in the scenery of Washington in full bloom. Sitting behind Mac is Lane. She's a friend of both of the brothers, but is closest with Mac. And like with most road trips, Lane is napping with her headphones in. As the song ends, the host of the local radio station chips in. Mac is focused on the trees when he starts to catch on to what they're talking about.
Kalawal River. Quill, their beloved dog, who was last seen with May, has yet to be found. May's brother and grandfather are still hoping he'll find his way home. But if you do see him, please call the station. We were lucky enough to get a comment from her grandfather, as he wants to warn others to stay on the path when you're in these woods, and don't listen to the whistling.
Hey, did you hear that? What? Wasn't listening? Of course. Well, apparently some little girl died around here last week. Eerie. But, anyways, where do I have to turn again? Well, I believe it should be coming up pretty soon. We've barely passed any cars. Where exactly are we going? I don't know, I've never been there, but I've heard it's beautiful. It should be a great place to finally get some peace. Yeah, I need a break from education. If I'm being honest with you, I'm not looking forward to going back. But come on, it's just 2 more years. Easy peasy. Then what? I have no idea. Hey, the turn is just up here. I almost missed it.
As they venture further away from society, Jake is speeding down the dirt road when he hits a bad pothole and accidentally punctures one of the tires. The car dangerously swerves into the dirt.
Oh my god, okay, we're okay.
He manages to align the car with the road and hits the brakes. Lane launches forward into the back of Mac's seat. Ah, fuck! Jesus, Jake!
Jake, are you okay? How about you, Lane? You good? Yep, I'm good.
Well, aside from, you know, slamming into the back of your seat, I'm feeling peachy. How far are we away from camp?
Well, I have no idea. My phone doesn't seem to have any signal. I don't think we're too far.
Okay, well, I really have to pee, and I don't think I'm going to make it to camp. The pipes are bursting.
Gross. Well, we're pretty much stranded until somebody, me, fixes the car. So, you're going to find somewhere around here to ease the pipes.
Great. Okay, well, I'll go do that. Yay, peeing in the woods.
Right, so, Jake, yes, you are going to stay here and fix the car. And what are you going to do? I am going to grab the gear and head towards the campsite. I'm sure we're not too far, so I'll start setting everything up. What do you guys get there?
Mac gets out and grabs a couple of bags from the trunk and heads off down the road. Lane steps out and walks to the left of the car to try and find somewhere to pee. Jake gets out and stretches, begins looking around the car, making sure everything is all right.
Sometimes I feel like I'm the only one who knows how to do anything around here. I didn't even want to go camping.
Jake begins to think to himself as he walks towards the back of the car. Before opening the trunk, looking to the left, he sees Lane going deeper into the woods.
Hey, Lane, try not to get lost or something, because that sounds like a lot of work. And I don't think she's awake. Nope, she's gone. I don't know why she can't just go behind a tree or something. Okay, so they both straight up love me, alone in the middle of nowhere with a broken car. I swear to God.
Finally finding the tools, Jake places the tool bag by the broken tire and goes back to the spare.
Jesus, this thing's heavier than it looks. I need to start going to the gym or something, like, damn.
As Jake's struggling to get the tire out from the trunk, he glances towards the tool bag, which now appears to be slumped over and the tools all sprawled about. When he finally gets the tire out, it drops right on his foot. The tire then begins to roll off the road and into a ditch. Walking over, he notices a screwdriver beside the tire. He picks it up and looks back towards the bag, slightly confused.
Okay, where's the bag?
He struggles to push the tire up the small hill and out of the ditch. Letting go, exhausted, he manages to walk towards the car to confirm his suspicion. The bag is gone.
I swear it was here. I mean, I can see the mark it made on the ground. Someone could have taken it? Could they? Maybe Mac came back and grabbed it by accident. Hey, Mac. Mac? Where did he go?
Jake is startled by the bouncing of the tire. He looks towards the road and sees the spare has begun to roll away.
What the hell?
Jake runs after it, but the tire is rolling in an unnaturally constant speed. It's just fast enough for Jake to be unable to catch up. Jake is running as fast as he can when he almost rolls his ankle in a small pothole.
You know, there's not this many potholes in the city. We could have just stayed at home, but no. Mac and Lane wanted to go camping. Now I'm chasing a damn tire.
The tire suddenly hits an obstruction on the road and flings into the woods. Jake stops to catch his breath.
Great. Where did it go?
And begins to walk in the direction he thinks the tire has gone. Into the woods. Looking into the woods, Lane can't seem to find a good spot. I think I'm gonna have to go deeper into the woods to find somewhere good. Don't want them seeing me. Lane is peep shy and needs someplace completely private in order to go.
Hey, Lane, try not to get lost or something, because this sounds like a lot of work.
Bitch, I don't get lost. A hot minute or two go by, and her mindset completely changes. Jeez. Walking in these woods is not easy as some make it look. Lane, still desperately needing to pee, walks deeper into the woods when she stumbles upon a derelict shack that so happens to be accompanied by a creepy, gross-looking outhouse. Lane reluctantly and cautiously walks up to the smelly outhouse. Ah, yes. It's not every day you find a creepy old cabin in the woods. All alone, I might add. Yikes. This looks fucking creepy. Definitely has a wrong turn, hillbilly, hick type serial killer vibe to it. But, fuck, at least it's private. Lane attempts to open the outhouse door, but it seems to be wedged stuck. Well, this isn't gonna work. She continues to poke around the desolate place. I mean, there has to be a good spot to pee somewhere in this bloody forest. Lane walks around the old shack of the house, hoping to find a spot. But unfortunately, everywhere seems to be far too open for her liking. And even though this place appears to be abandoned, she can't help but get the feeling she's being watched. I could always go into the house, see if there's something I could pee in and maybe dump it out after. But I don't know. That just kind of screams like a bad idea. You know, the second I go in there, either a group of psycho cannibal freaks will come out and kill me, or a grotesque looking thing will appear out of nowhere. Yeah, I'll pass. But, this girl has to pee, and I can't hold it in any longer. She hears a loud snap coming from the bushes beside her. It startles her, causing her to almost piss herself. I knew it. Okay, well, if there's a psycho cannibal running into their house, won't be a good idea. But if it's the super slow but somehow fast grotesque thing that will ultimately catch up to me if I run shows up, I will not be able to outrun him without pissing my pants. Hearing the snapping noise again, but closer, she decides that her best bet is getting into that outhouse. Okay, we're fine. We're fine. We'll be fine. Once I get this stupid fucking door open, we'll be fine. I'm fine. With the loud sound of snapping twigs coming closer, she tries to reassure herself. Lane manages to finally unwedge the door and quickly climbs in before the sound reaches to where she was standing earlier. Fuck. I should have just gone into the house. This is nasty. The pungent smell of the outhouse fills into her nostrils, almost making puke. But she stands there, holding her breath, waiting for the sound of the snapping twigs to disappear. Peering through one of the knot holes of the wooden door, and to her surprise, she saw a tiny frog-like being march out of the forest. That fucking scared me half to death. Lane is still reluctant, but knowing this is the best she'll get, finally goes pee. Unfortunately, but to no one's surprise, the creepy outhouse is out of toilet paper. Not wanting to stay in this disgusting thing any longer, she just does a quick shake. But as she's reaching for the door, she spots one of those things standing outside. She jumps at the sight. As much as she would love to stay in the safety of the nasty shack, she can't stand the putrid smell any longer. Terrified of the weird-looking thing, she finds the courage and opens the door. As described before, standing in front of Elaine is some tiny, green, slimy creature standing on two legs. It just stares at her, almost as if it's waiting. Unaware of what she was in the presence of, the revolting smell has its way, and the terrified Lane throws up. The projectile nearly landing on the creature, it remained still, simply making a noise, and continued to stare at her. That's when Lane realized how many of those little guys there were, all just staring, waiting for her to do something else. Not knowing what to do, she wipes her mouth and breaks the silence. I come in peace. I just needed to use the bathroom, and this was the only suitable place to go. Sorry if I bothered y'all, and for almost coating your friend in vomit. She pauses, waiting for them to say something, but they just watch her. Yeah, the smell in that outhouse was, well, it wasn't pleasant. Just letting you know, I found it like that. Not that. Okay. Well, as much as I would love to stay and chat, Lane slowly begins to exit the outhouse, continuing her conversation with the little people, and bumps into a tire. She continues paying no attention. My friends will be waiting for me. You see, I've been gone for quite some time. She notices the Manageshi have blocked the way she came. She picks up the crowbar placed next to the tire and continues to talk to them, hoping that it's distracting enough to distance herself. Just a shy peer over here. Can't take me anywhere. She says, accidentally swinging around the crowbar. Every step back she takes, they take two more towards her. If it's payment for the gross bathroom that I used.
She starts rummaging through her pockets.
Well, here's a dollar and a button for your trouble. Yeah, here. Lane drops both of the items in front of the Manigeshi and runs away, completely losing her shit in the process. Lane finds herself predictably lost until she hears some commotion. She grips the crowbar.
God, these bags are so heavy. I really thought this camp would be a lot closer.
Looking back, he can't even see the car anymore.
I hope Jake doesn't take too long. I don't like being out here alone.
Mac continues walking along the road until he finds a path.
This must be a shortcut to the camp.
His gut tells him to stop at the entrance.
I don't have a good feeling about this, but I really told Jake and Lane I'd set up the camp before they get there.
If he continues down the road, it might take him forever to get there. And who knows, they might get there before him. But if he takes the shortcut, he'll definitely get there before them. So, he ignores his gut feeling and begins walking down the makeshift path.
Okay, where is this campsite? It must be this way, I'm sure of it. But I don't know. Maybe this doesn't lead to the camp.
Worried, Max stops to look at his phone. No service. Typical. Suddenly, a branch snaps in front of him, dragging his attention away. Looking up, he sees nothing. Yet, in the silence, he hears a noise. A faint whistle of the wind, perhaps? It's coming from the direction of the branch.
It could be other people, maybe, who are at the campsite as well. I guess we'll see.
Unaware of the dangers in front of him, he walks deeper into the woods. He continues down the path until he sees a bridge accompanied by the sound of water. Soon, Mac finds a rushing ravine bordered by lush hills.
Wow, this is beautiful.
Mac takes out his phone and looks towards the steep hillside when he sees a figure. Putting down his phone, he moves to get a better look. Then he sees it. Somebody running along the hilltop, when suddenly they tumble down. The person is rolling, hitting multiple rocks when he hears their body slam on the rocky riverside. Mac, unable to move, stares in terror.
My God. Hey, are you okay?
He yells towards the limp body. Mac runs to help this person, but is stopped by a large dog at the end of the bridge. The hair on his arm raised and his stomach sinks.
This dog does not look very full friendly to me. It almost feels like it's staring into my soul.
That's when the sound of the rushing water from the river below begins to diminish. And the world around him starts to blur, as if all he can focus on is this dog. He tries to look away, to move, to run, but he can't feel his body, as if it's numb. Suddenly, the dog bolts into the woods, and he regains feeling. Looking towards where the dog had run off to, he sees a figure.
Someone holding a wrench? Is that Jay?
The whistling of sharp winds increased. And Jake seems to be twitching. He drops the wrench and begins to laugh, sounding close to a shriek, or maybe a distorted cackle.
Hey Jake, are you okay?
Taking a step forward, Jake abruptly stops laughing. It feels like the dog. He's just staring at me. Something must be wrong. Then Jake dashes into the darkening forest. Mac chases after him until the path ends, almost stripping on a rope that was sticking out of the ground. That's when he sees it. A foxhole.
an overgrown hole surrounded by vegetation and moist dirt. Gross, he thought to himself. Mac was just about to turn around when he hears Jake's laugh, faintly coming from inside the dark hole.
Jake?
Mac begins to creep towards the hole, only hearing the sound of shallow breathing.
What's going on?
He stops due to the sound of something snapping below. Looking down, it seems he stepped on a stick. But looking closer, not a stick, bone. Quickly observing the rest of the area, there are bones littered everywhere. All of a sudden, his attention is brought back to the hole. Replacing the shallow breathing is a deep growl. And now, reflective eyes stare back. Without missing a beat, Mac turns around and starts running. He runs as fast as he possibly can, the sound of hungry, rapid animals chasing close behind him. He somehow manages to reach the bridge. Glancing towards the river, the person who fell is now standing, and missing an arm. He pauses to call for her, but she only glares back. Mac continues running onward towards the trail. He looks back only for a second, and suddenly he slams into something and lands on his back. Thankfully, the bags break his fall.
Ow! Mac, what the hell? Why are you running out here? Ow, what?
Mac jumps off the ground and grabs his brother.
Jay, we need to get out of here. There are wild animals. Yeah, it's the woods. We'll also be out here. Shut up. I'm serious. This is serious.
Mac stops when he notices his brother is staring at him. Wait. Not at, but past him. Then he hears it. That same deep growl from the hole. Looking past Jake, Mac notices another creature. And in the corner of his eyes, two more on each side. Who knows how many he can't see, but he can feel the hunger in their eyes.
We're surrounded. What the hell are these things? I don't know, but stay close to me. Is there anything in those bags we can use? I'm not sure. I don't think we exactly have enough time to look.
And with no way to escape, the brothers are surrounded by these hungry beings. The forest is completely silent, other than the low, growling hum all around them. When, out of nowhere, the boys and the beings are startled by the deafening screaming of Lane. Lane comes blazing in, ferociously swinging a crowbar, and knocks one of the creatures to the ground. The brothers stare in disbelief. Jake, quick to action, unzips one of the bags and grabs their small axe. One of the stick-looking people lunges towards Lane, but she smacks it midair with another hard swing. Jake runs towards it and wedges the axe in its face, giving Lane time to quickly catch her breath. Hey, Mac, are you just gonna stand there?
Let's go, Lane.
They all start running down the path. The creature's not far. Mac begins to lag behind, and Lane notices. Jesus, Mac! Drop the damn bags! Mac quickly throws the bags off his shoulders and sprints as fast as he can, catching up to Lane and Jake. When finally they reach the road, the car is not far in the distance. The same can be said about the creatures. They don't stop running till they finally reach the car, which was luckily already facing the direction to the main road. Jake, with keys in his hand, turns on the car and steps on the gas, leaving no time for seatbelts. After everyone has a moment to catch their breath, Jake breaks the silence.
What the hell, Mac? What were those things? I don't know.
Let's not go back. With those creatures and the slimy frog things that ambushed me at the Hoboken Hollow outhouse.
What?
I don't know, but at least Jake fixed the tire so we could get out of there.
Guys, I didn't fix the tire. I was trying to find the damn thing when Mac ran into me. What the fuck is that?
Mac points at some small frog-like creature on the road, catching everyone's attention. Jake, watch out! Lane panics. Jake swerves around the creature, nearly flipping the car. Jake looks at everybody.
Was that bitch digging a pothole?
And with that, that concludes our episode. Like us on Facebook and Instagram. We are the Historical Natives on both of those platforms. Don't forget to check out our website, thehistoricalnatives.ca, for our beautiful 10 out of 10 merch.
Miwe panima minawa kikawabi mugum. That's it. We'll see you at a later time.